Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Good morning, Quarter Bananas people out there in Radio Land. Or are we the Quarter Bananas people in Radio Land? I guess we are, really, aren't we?
Everyone's a Quarter Bananas person, I just don't know it yet.
Would you like to repeat that, please, Sue, now that you've got a microphone?
Everyone's a Quilted Bananas person, they just don't know it yet.
True that. So, as we've already said, we're Quilted Bananas on Access Radio 106.1 FM, and Quilted Bananas is an acronym for Queer, Intersex, Intersectional, Lesbian, Taka, Tapui, Trans, NB, Diverse, Bisexual, Ace and Nanas. And we'd like to say a huge thank you to the Peter Hurrell Foundation, as their grant has paid for our Access Radio time, allowing us to make our voices heard live and also via the podcast you can download through your regular podcast player. And you can find out more about the Rural Foundation by visiting ruralfoundation.nz. In the studio today, as you might have already guessed, you have me and Sue. I'm Fiona, and we're the Tangent Show. We did get provided with that name, didn't we, Sue?
We did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because we do go on fun tangents, I guess, don't we?
Yeah, we got provided that by one of the previous managers of Access Radio.
That's true.
Who also happens to be a fairly spectacular author.
Yes, yes. I'm looking forward to the new book.
And we've interviewed a number of authors, and today we don't have an author because, sadly, the person that I talked to was unwell. So hopefully, if no one else picks up her enthusiasm for doing one, we'll see her in a few weeks.
Yes.
I'm kind of hopeful that someone does, because we've got just got a book coming out.
Excellent.
That's me jumping across pronouns in a most wrong way.
Uh-huh.
I just hate pronouns. Stupid English. Stupid European languages. Why do we just...
No pronouns.
Yeah, just... Yeah. Or
everyone.
Dear.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now.
So we've got a few things.
We have.
Anyway, because...
That's right.
Because we've got a bit behind on important things like TV viewing and...
Books.
Yes. What's going on.
Yes, exactly. And other things. And music as well. Speaking of which, do you mind if I play a song now?
Yes.
It is a bit of a banger, and it will come up later on in the show, I think.
Wake us up, Fiona.
Yes, I will. And it would help if I put the... Here we go.
You think I'm pretty?
That just stopped. Fiona was saying to me, do you want me to go first or do you want you to go first? I was just mulling over that and suddenly a decision was upon me. So,
yes,
let's start
before that, I'll just mention that track was called Monge 2 and it's by Wet Leg, who I think were at Laneway this year in Auckland, and there were so many great bands at Laneway this morning. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there. It is also on the Heat of Rivalry soundtrack, and we may talk about that later on.
There's some really good soundtracks coming through on TV now. Mm-hmm. I have to sit there with my iPad as I'm watching quite a few of them. I should actually just put what's that one on?
Shazam
and get it. But
yeah,
but no, I'm looking up.
I know.
Episode 3 of.
Yes, exactly. And like actually I think Riot Woman, which we might talk about as well. Like that's what I, you know, there are multiple things wrong with streaming services, especially one in particular. Oh, actually others as well. But one of the things is that it is great for finding playlists that other people have done for TV series and films. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, off you go, Sue.
So what have I got? I've been watching Pluribus.
Yes.
And while you know, obviously my subscriptions have blown out considerably because, you know, you have to have Apple for this and Neon for that. Got to have Neon for the Pit. Got to have Disney for something or other else.
Oh yes, we've been enjoying the Pit. I think we're in the midst of a dramatic thing.
It's quite intense,
towards the end of the first season. Yeah.
The last, particularly the penultimate episode is kind of like, oh my god, oh no,
the second series or the first series?
Second series.
Oh, we're not there yet. We're only towards the end of the first series.
The second series is.
La 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 la! Don't tell me too much.
Yeah, it's quite different. Just the nature of it. Actually, I'm happy to see that it's quite different because otherwise what you end up getting is you just slip into, you know, now it's a 5-year series of the same things and perpetually trying to ramp up the dramaticness of what's coming in. Whereas, you know, I think ERs have a steady stream of mum tripped over and smashed her lip through. Teeth through a lip, or Sue ran herself over with the car, or you know, those kind of
yes, exactly
day to day idiocy in that particular case. So yeah, so on Apple we've currently got Pluribus, and I was just saying to Fiona on the way, and that Pluribus does it takes a dollar each way. Kills off your lesbian in the first episode.
I know, that wonderful actor whose name I've forgotten, but who is incredible. She was also in Younger as well.
So we've killed off the lesbian who's a bit sane and
yes,
nice.
Who was the publisher?
Yeah, I think yes. She's a yeah.
Yeah. So and tell us a bit more about Pluribus. So it's about an author, right?
Hmm.
Yes.
So her partner survives through the series, obviously, because she's the protagonist, and kind of varies between quite unhinged and quite you know, the only sort of sane person left in some ways. So in Pluribus, everyone all the humans basically have been had their bodies taken over by an alien invasion stroke infection stroke. So it's exploring that that concept of finding yourself suddenly alone in the world, or suddenly alone with a few other people around, and those other people around have quite different takes on the situation. So it's juggling that, you know, well, what do you do in this situation? How do you survive it? How do you you know, continue to live your life?
Is this how many in the world? Is it 12, 13?
I think there was 12. They found a 13th. Then they so it went up one and down one, I think. She has opinions. It's so unlesbian like that.
But the lead actor, Rhea Seehorn, is just incredible. I think I've made this confession on air. Hopefully everyone's forgotten, but I'll make it again, is that I've never seen Breaking Bad, but I gather that Rhea Seehorn, I think her name is, was incredible in that. And she is just magnificent in this, isn't she?
It's almost, in many ways, it's almost a solo piece, although there's obviously other characters in there. So there's some good acting, there's some good concept to, you know, kind of keep your mind ticking over. There's one piece where, you know, she's obviously finding things to do that have, you know, that are even vaguely kind of entertaining and passing time, which
yeah,
because I would not have thought of that particular.
No, exactly. And I guess that's the thing, is that of the 13 people, apart from them, the whole world is basically one mind, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they all live to serve the 13, or they say they do. And whatever the main character wants, she'll get.
Yes.
Yes, whether it's travelling the world or... But the thing is, being one mind means that if you do something to one person, if you make them unhappy or hurt them, then that will affect
everyone
in the world. Yeah.
And while they're like, as a, you know, on the surface, they're here to serve them and to, you know, meet their every need. The actual purpose is to integrate them.
Yes.
So there's some interesting foozles to get around to, you know, if you've got 13 left and you don't want to, you know, and they won't integrate, or you can't integrate them, then, you know, you just kind of leave them to it.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's the thing, is that, and that's all the emotions that the main character goes through in terms of understanding the situation, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the thing as well, is that it's like, you know, we're so happy, we're not unhappy anymore. You can join us and you'll never worry about anything again. Yeah. We are one mind.
Yeah.
And I guess it's kind of interesting from a cult perspective, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's got that cult perspective. It's got that sort of Joe 90 dream of being able to do anything, you know. Mm-hmm. And in the sort of context of, you know, in that situation, you know, which is so weird, what do you do? How do you get through it? How do you get any human contact?
Yes, and the main character, Carol Sturka, is quite prickly to start off with, I guess.
I think prickles continue pretty much for...
Well, yeah, no, it's true, yeah. And I guess the other thing, just going back to the queerness of it, I guess, is that Carol Sturka is somebody who's made her name writing heterosexual romances, right?
Right.
And but is a lesbian herself, and written it from a lesbian perspective, but couldn't get it published, and travels the world, you know, showing up for all of these meet and greets with, you know, sort of fans of the books, but really just wants to put out a lesbian romance, right?
Yeah. So I I found the first episode, at the end of the first episode, I don't think it kind of captured where it was going. So it's like I got to the end of the first episode and thought, oh, you know, okay, so that's it. You know, it's the end of the world, kind of, you know, we've seen this before. But it rewarded continued watching.
Well, yeah, and I think also from, you know, like the queerness perspective as well, I guess you've got, you know, Carol's need for connection, I guess, and there's a woman who ends up, they basically seek, you know, the entity who are running the world, kind of, I guess, because they have access, because Carol's partner before she died was integrated into the entity, I guess, or the oneness of it all. They know everything that that person knew about Carol, and so they basically find somebody in the world and make her a partner for Carol, and Carol really resists it, right?
She resists it. But still has that need for, you know, that sort of need for connection and so yeah, there's quite a lot of that sort of battle for you know where she's going with it, which was good. It was quite well done, I thought.
It certainly keeps you watching, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think really those the two series that have really captured those kind of psychological speculative concepts recently. Pluribus has been one, and before that, Severance, where you had that split from your non-work persona and making sense of an environment where half of your life is invisible to you. I think those two are basically the strongest kind of psychological or, you know, sort of speculative what-ifs in this strange situation. So I think both of which are Apple.
And in terms of, I guess I'm just curious, so you read quite a lot of science fantasy and science fiction. Have you read similar kind of books, I guess, in terms of this, of either of those kind of psychological ones that are similar at all?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah? Sorry to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I think it's quite common in those things. So the really the whole cyberpunk in many ways has that, you know, has that theme running through, maybe not quite as complex. I'm trying to remember the name of it, the one with where the wife comes back from a marine expedition.
All Our Wives Under the Sea. Julia Armfield. Yeah, that's true.
That's kind of got that kind of component to it. There's a number of ones that, you know, a good one will twist your view of the world ask you to think differently about what's possible. But I think those are.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and also the kind of that need to be like everyone else, I guess, comply with the world, I guess. Yeah? Both of them are kind of in a way like about that.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, in what's sort of regarded as a classic, you know, that classic canon of science fiction. That wasn't as common. So basically, you know, you sort of take an adventure thing and drop it into a different environment. I think this is much more common with the growth of published people from different cultures and different standpoints and you know, queer authors and women, and that those asking us to look at different possibilities. I think that's to me one of the threads that runs through trans writers, more trans NB, is that they're starting from a position that they've had to invent possibilities for themselves anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's often quite a rich thread through those sort of trend writers.
Yeah, I guess I was just thinking of A.J. Fitzwater and that wonderful book about the two women who, during Second World War, who go and live on the farm and become, it's just incredible, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I think these things
I will think of the name. I have it at home. It's got an amazing cover.
Yes. Yeah, it has, with the Taniwha.
Yes, yeah.
So that was that's one of the ones that I've watched recently. The other one, so I watched a little bit of Frauds. Really, for me so far, I don't know that I'm captured by the story, but what it does have, it has the magnificently queer coded, but not queer, I think, Saran Jones and Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah, that's right. We were just our little suddenly found fan club for Saran Jones that we talked about before we came on air this morning. Yeah. Like, we'll watch anything with Saran Jones. Saran Jones in a submarine, sure, let's go there. Vigil,
Wonky story, with Saran Jones with drones. We had Saran Jones.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah. Yes. And we've got, Scott and Bailey as well, Saran Jones. That's definitely, I think I've rewatched that a couple of times, actually.
Yeah. So there's the entertainment of just watching Saran Jones and Jodie Whittaker. I think the story hasn't really grabbed me, but it has Saran Jones and Jodie Whittaker. So that's where my standards are. Although it does mess with my head because Saran Jones is bleached blonde.
Oh, that's true.
And Jodie Whittaker is dark. And
yes.
I think in Doctor Who Jodie Whittaker was blonde. So I kind of,
Yes.
Every now and then that goes, yes. What?
Yes. I think Saran Jones, for me, the pinnacle will always be Gentleman Jack,
Yeah.
Yes.
And the other thing that I've been watching... and this is, it just made me jump for joy when I saw this being advertised.
Yes.
Is Mr. Hugo's Little Library.
Mm-hmm.
This is a children's program. It's on TVNZ On Demand. There are four episodes. It's a co-production New Zealand and Canada. And it has Mr. Hugo, a.k.a. Hugo Girl, and I thought, I was so happy to see that they've done this, because you get that nonsense out of Destiny, or out of Brian Tamaki in particular, where he's talking about what happens at drag story hours. And what happens at drag story hours is people in costume with theatrical leanings read stories to children. They don't read stories to children that are about what Brian Tamaki fantasizes them being about. They read children's stories to children. So I thought this is great because, one, I know that the kids will really enjoy it. And two, because it puts out there, this is what it's really, this is what drag story is really about. It's about magnificent costumes. And I know that our granddaughter was just mesmerised by Hugo Girl doing the announcing or the stage compere at... up in the plaza this year, she was just mesmerised. So just watching every move and the costume. It's the costumes, they're colourful and they look dramatic. And for a kid who's at all interested in drama, it's there.
It's very cool.
Do you want to play us another song?
Sure.
You've got a TV one. But
I have, but shall we talk about that after?
Yeah, do your song first, and then we'll come back.
Cool. The next one is, now this is an artist who came to my attention and my partner's attention because of the Celebrity Traitors. And if you watch the Celebrity Traitors, that's the UK version, you'll probably know who I'm talking about. No, it's not Alan Carr, it's Kat Burns. And just Kat Burns was part of the Celebrity Traitors and was just magnificent in it. And it was really interesting in looking up her bio yesterday to see that she had already said that she was ADHD and how that helped her write music. And but then I saw also that she's recently shared her autism diagnosis as well. And it's just really interesting if you watch I don't know a lot about autism, but just to watch the series again and see how the patterns and that kind of thing that she is kind of, just the way that she kind of conducts herself through the Celebrity Traitors is really cool. But anyway, she is an artist and a really popular one in the UK, was born, grew up in Croydon in London, and this is a song that's popular in our household at the moment, and it is There's Something About Her.
Let me tell you about a girl. I don't really do this, but I can't keep it to myself. She turns every head in the room. Oh God, she's something else. I lose all my composure. This ain't nothing that I felt. I need some help. Cause I'm not sure how you do it in my thoughts. Intrusive living when free in my mind. There's just something about her. Perfectly made, it's like God, she had a plan. Have I missed my chance with you? You must be in demand. I'm trying to keep it cool, but I'd do anything I can. Man, I sound like a fan. Cause I'm not sure how you do it in my thoughts. Intrusive living when free in my mind. There's just something about her.
And that was There's Something About Her by Kat Burns, who, as I was saying, during the break, Sue was telling me that it's somebody who has ADHD and autism has
AUDHD.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know if there's a way to say that, but it's kind of like living in a civil war where half of you wants to be completely chaotic and the other half of you wants to be completely organised and, you know what's happening and have everything planned. And
interesting.
Or it can be.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's quite a bit of variability about how any of these. So autistic people have, you know, characteristics of sort of social awkwardness and finding it difficult to read people, and ADHD people do as well, but in a different way. It's because you don't notice. If your attention wasn't there, you don't necessarily pick stuff up, and you can't maintain a continuous kind of pattern of being there and that kind of thing. So it's quite different from either of them by itself. So now I have to say when Fiona gave me her iPad and said, "This is what I've thought I've been talking about today."
Yes.
I looked at it and it said cat burns. It's like you got cat mold and now you've got cat burns.
Cat mold is what I have to go and pick up at the vet after we finish the show. That's why. Okay, the cat mold.
What's cat mold?
It's something that you can put on cat's food, which helps them digest. So one of the things we were talking about before the music break was Gentleman Jack's or Anne Jones, etc. But also, I guess, just thinking about it, it kind of tied into something that I wanted to mention, which was really about kind of books and other writing being a source for TV shows and film. And as we know, we've got Gentleman Jack, which was the diaries of Gentleman Jack herself, who lived in Halifax.
Which are quite
extensive diaries. They are extensive, written in code.
Substantial part hasn't been decoded yet, has
no,
it?
No, probably not, no. But anyway, one of the things is that TV shows are always looking at what are the good books, or what are the books to kind of, or even webcomics, for example, to be able to adapt into TV shows. And we can see that with the Heartstopper Universe, that was a webcomic that Alice Oseman started a decade ago, and it's just recently finished. Certainly through the webcomic, the epilogue has been published. The final movie on Netflix will come out in July this year. That just started off as a webcomic that she was drawing, and certainly it's a way that they're always looking through to see. And there was an article just recently in the LA Times about this, about looking through for source material. And for example, it says in this article that I was reading, it says, you know, looking at a Hulu's college drama Tell Me Lies and Hockey Romance, Heat of Rivalry have become pop culture sensations, with The Summer I Turned Pretty and All the Boys as well. We've got Invisible Boys as well, which we haven't talked about on TVNZ, which off the top of my head I can't remember the author's name, but he's just recently put out another one, and that's definitely worth watching, Invisible Boys on TVNZ. But yeah, I guess, like, for example, the phenomenon of the Game Changer series by Rachel Reid, which the second book is Heat of Rivalry, has just really taken off, and it's been publicised or, you know, produced and shown in multiple countries around the world. Some people will be put off by it because they think of it as too much gay sex. Certainly there is quite a lot at the beginning, but you know, the books themselves, there are six in the series, really do, that whole universe does really go into a lot of romance. These closeted, mostly closeted characters in the series are definitely worthwhile watching. And I guess Rachel Reid herself, who's from Halifax, Nova Scotia, started off writing fanfic and then adapted a story that she had written to become a book, which was Game Changer and then Heat of Rivalry. And so what's happening then is that, I just saw yesterday that another hockey romance, this time with women, I think it's field hockey though, this one, is Cleat Cute. I just got a text from Ellen to say that it's No Man's Land by AJ Fitzwater. Thanks very much, Ellen. We were talking about before. Spectacular book, really, really worth reading. It's a short novella. But Heat of Rivalry, I've slightly lost my train of thought there. but with Click Cute, which is another book, we might see more and more queer TV shows, hopefully, coming on the various streaming platforms. Hedda Rivalry itself is on HBO Max, on Sky or Neon in New Zealand. But we've also got other things, as I said, that they're looking through. So it just really shows that, of the thousands and thousands and thousands, dare I say, of fanfics to do with Heartstopper, Hedda Rivalry, Doctor Who, everything you can think of, basically.
Yeah.
Basically, some of them can be fodder for TV shows to come. So I just really think that it's really kind of interesting to see that, if you are interested in writing, there's some easy ways to start out there, free platforms to publish on if you're interested in NaNoWriMo at the end of the year, and other various competitions throughout the year. So you never know, whatever you write might end up as a TV show. Yeah.
I think one of the things about the TV thing, so I was watching an interview with Philip Pullman. Philip Pullman wrote his Dark Materials trilogy. He's just come out with the third book of the Book of Dust, which has been very long gaps between those books. And he's very, very thoughtful about the writing, as many writers are. In the interview, he talks about, so he was asked about taking the books to from the book format into television and into movies, and how much control he wants to have over them, and what you give away when you sell it. And he said, the only question I have for somebody who wants is how much. and he said, because these are quite different, they're different ways of storytelling, they're quite different formats, they work differently.
That's right.
It's generally, actually, you miss out a lot by putting a book certainly into a movie, and nearly as much by putting it into a TV series.
But I guess it's kind of interesting, isn't it, is that I guess in a library term you would have something like the work, which is the original work, and then you have kind of variations on top of that, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, for example, with the two I mentioned, Heartstopper and A Hedda Rivalry, both authors were very, very involved in, like, Alice Oseman wrote the original scripts. Rachel Reid certainly worked a lot with Jacob Turney in Hedda Rivalry. And I think there's a validity and a truth that comes through that joins the two, even though there are different scenes, produced in different ways. It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, he obviously just, that's a different format and not one that I'm working in. And once they've bought the rights to it, they're free to do to bring it to an entirely different thing, and it won't look the same.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that shorter works often make a better for those adaptations.
Interesting, and
I thought, well, actually, one of the more interesting ones recently was, I think it's Arrival, where the aliens arrive and then
is it the Amy Adams movie?
They hire this, linguist to try and interpret what they're telling them. And that was a very short story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It was, and the short story component was from outside of where the story is for this. And I thought, I can exactly see that from that particular one. The other thing he talked about was that you can do multiple things at once in film and TV that you can't do in writing.
It's true.
And that the one where you can do it in writing is the one where you can do it in writing is comics. So he's quite interested in doing comic stuff. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, so we might. Have we got any books that we want to?
Yes, yeah, we do. Actually, that just reminded me of a book, and then it flew out of my brain again.
Oh.
After you, in terms of a book being adapted. I know what it was. It wasn't. It was a movie. The History of Sound, an amazing short story by, I think, Ben Showalter, I think, off the top of my head. But it was produced into a movie with the wonderful... now I've forgotten his name. It was Paul Mescal and Josh O'Connor. And the movie itself kind of enlarged on the short story. And I love the short story, but I really love the movie because it actually kind of showed almost like an epilogue. And yeah, I know, so it's kind of interesting,
idea,
isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Just trying to follow along the story didn't really.
Exactly.
Well, that wasn't very clever.
What was that?
One of the things I'm reading at the moment, or I have been reading and I've been listening to on audiobooks, is I've been listening to the Malka Older series, and as I'm looking at it on my ebook here, it says Ricking Known Cesses, which cannot be what it really is.
Ricking Known Cesses? What?
It's because it's chopped off the front end of the... I think it's mimicking known successes. This is a kind of murder mystery series. It's a climate punk kind of thing. So it's about, you know, that you've messed up the world and this is where you're living now, and it's quite cosy, which I quite like, because actually the world is not quite cosy at the moment, and it's quite nice to have a bit of a break from many dreadful things happening all at once. So I've only got my phone here, and it's on my ebook books where I can't get at them. But they're just such a nice... It's kind of like a murder mystery romance.
Ooh, a crimeance. You could almost call it.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, speculative crimeance.
A speculative crimeance. It gets even better.
It does.
Yeah.
And they've just got such a nice pace and feel to them.
Right. And what was that again? Can you...
Malka Older series.
Malka Older.
I think the first of it... Mimicking known successes.
Oh, maybe we should put that on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm certainly interested in taking a look. I was going to mention a book called Is This a Cry for Help by Emily Austin. It's very popular in the reserves at the moment in the SMART Consortia and of libraries, which is the lower or Wellington region, apart from Levin and Horowhenua. And in Wellington as well, library. So Whitcourse doesn't have it because I tried to buy it. It's just a cry for help. And the blurb about it is, Darcy's life turns out better than she could have ever imagined. She's a librarian at a local branch while her wife, Joy, runs a bookbinding service. Between the two of them, there is no more room on their shelves with their ample book collections. It sounds familiar. Various knickknacks and baubles and dried bouquets. Rounding out their ideal life are two cats and a sun-soaked house by the lake. But when Darcy receives the news, that her ex-boyfriend Ben has passed away, she spirals into a pit of guilt and regret, resulting in a mental breakdown and medical leave from the library. When she returns to work, Darcy's met with more unrest as protests call for book bans and a second look at the branch's upcoming DEI, that's Diversity, Equality and Inclusion programming. Through the support of her colleagues and by examining her past, Darcy discovers her own agency and how to rally the community that stands with her. And it says here, Is This a Cry for Help? Is a resounding, delightful novel from the queen of darkly quirky and daringly flawed heroines. And that's Sarah Haywood, author of The Cactus, who said that. And yeah, it's just a wonderful book. Obviously, it's close to home for me since I work in a library. Is That Cry
Might
for
have
Help?
Some cats.
It does have cats as well. Emily Austin is a wonderful author as well. Definitely look out for her. And another book that I found unexpectedly from Steadfast Books, if you're ever in Christchurch, It's a fairly new secondhand bookshop over off Lincoln Road in Christchurch. And this one was Southern Men, Gay Lives and Pictures by Chris Brickell.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a wonderful book. And it contains the collections of, it delves into the collections of three different men who were in the military and served, and their lives in New Zealand as queer men afterwards. So definitely, I'm pretty sure Wellington City Libraries has a copy of this. So look out for that if you want to take a look. And just really quickly, another one which I did buy from Scorpio Books in Christchurch, Queer, a collection of LGBTQ writing from ancient times to yesterday, chosen by Frank Wynne. It's on ebook on the ePookaPooka Libby collection, if you are a member of any of the libraries apart from Wellington. I think Wellington has this in ebook as well, but I'm not sure. But it kind of basically has little, it has poetry, excerpts from books, it has Sappho in it, has Alison Bechdel on it. It's just one of those books that I really wanted to have on my bookshelf just as a dip in and enjoy kind of thing. But I know that you can borrow it from the libraries as well.
It's got a nice...
It's got a beautiful cover. I couldn't resist it.
It's nice to see a one of those sort of anthology books that doesn't just sort of, you know, use the rainbow.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a lovely cover. We'll put a photo of the books on Facebook. Yeah.
Yep.
What else have we got? We've got 10 minutes.
Got 10 minutes?
Yes.
That's enough for politics, isn't it? Let's fire into a few things happening. Obviously, for this year's the 40th anniversary of the homosexual law reform. This is not really a politics one, but there will be a celebration of that at Parliament. But Gareth Watkins has been putting up interviews of people who were involved in that at the time. Gareth is an absolute treasure, and I'll be going and having a listen to those, because those are just, you know, it's 40 years ago now. Those people are still around to tell the stories, and it's good to hear them, or some of them are. We've got a few interesting things coming up in political / semi-political. I have to say that I had the biggest wave of schadenfreude that I've been hit by for a while upon hearing that Caitlyn Jenner, who's been happy to go along with the Trump administration roughing up trans people because they're not proper trans people like her, has now found that you know what they've done with the passports, where they've pulled back everybody's official documentation and reassigned a gender of male. Her passport now says male, and she has complained that she can't travel. Ooh. She's complained to Donald, who may or may not care. So there's a big burst of leopards eating faces for Caitlyn Jenner there. Does everyone know what leopards eating faces is? It's
when I knew what you meant when you said it, though.
When I voted for the leopards eating faces party, I never thought the leopards would eat my face.
Oh, interesting. That's a very good, thank you for that.
Yes. Poor Caitlyn Jenner, which shouldn't be happening to anyone. And that documentation stuff is really actually crippling for people's ability to live and exist in the States. There have been challenges of it in some states.
Yeah, and actually a successful one in Montana.
Montana was a successful challenge.
Is it Tennessee, though, where they lost their licences overnight?
Yeah.
Or Kentucky, one of the two?
I thought it was Kansas, actually.
It was Kansas, you're right. I was thinking of that middle area of the states.
So it's a shambles.
Yes.
I saw that the Australian Lesbian Action Group, that the HRC had blocked them from banning biological men from their events. Why anyone would want to go to their events is beyond me. But they can now block people from their events. But that, of course, is a big, you know, that's a big flag of where your head's at when you're talking about biological men, because a lot of people aren't, you know, biology doesn't work that cleanly. I get a fairly constant stream of stuff from New Zealand first. I've obviously decided that due to me being ancient and a grandma, that I'm obviously in there. For a mere $10, they'll let me join the party.
So has the algorithm found you, Sue?
The algorithm found me. God knows what fed it. Fed my email into that algorithm. So currently from New Zealand first, they've now started the process around legally defining men and women, which is, it's not a terrain that you can define legally any more than, you know, some other definitions that they try and come up with. Hell, it was hard enough to even define Manuka honey, for goodness sakes, much less trying to define something that doesn't exist in that sort of binary. So at the same time that New Zealand First is launching an attempt to pass a law about defining men and women, it's just a nonsense. How are you going to do it? It hasn't been done effectively or efficiently or accurately or validly by anyone who's attempted to do this yet. If you're not one of those, where do you fit? Particularly seeing that assault on rights broadening quite explicitly to intersex people, which, you know, they will have always known that, you know, you're picking people off one at a time. So you pick off trans people, you pick off queer people via drag, which is an important part of queer culture, and it extends pretty much seamlessly to intersex people, and, you know, then it just follows the chain. And meanwhile, at the same time, I get an email from Tane Randall, who's now running for an MP there, and I'm just trying to find his little blurb about the rationale of bringing people together. Here it is. New Zealand First doesn't play those left-right games. They are the common sense voice in the room saying, right, how do we get through this together? So
I'm shaking my head at Sue.
How do we get through this together? Well, how we get through this together is, for a start, that you've got to include everybody in.
Yeah, and I think the we that he's talking about isn't us, is it?
I suspect it might not be.
Yeah.
And for the party who really has built its current base based on exactly opposing a politician who was like, we need to get through this together. Mm. It's the most self-aware kind of thing that I've been sent. I now have a little folder of interesting things I've been sent from our friends at New Zealand First.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fascinating how many parties think I'm one of them.
Just thinking internationally, an article in The Guardian in the last couple of weeks about the recent rise in anti-LGBTQ legislation in a number of African countries that already have strict sexuality laws. And the writer of the article spoke with LGBTQ people and activists fighting against the narratives that their identities are an imported, quote-unquote, Western creation, to better identify or to better understand the impact of those new laws, why they're happening and how foreign lobbying groups are pushing for more draconian laws. So that's definitely, if you're wanting to know what's happening in Ghana and Senegal and others, and just get an overview of those African countries so you can explore more and find out more about what's really happening in there, because as we know, the laws are already, I think, for example, there was one of the laws was increasing same-sex relationships to people found to be in one of them to 10 years in prison, for example. So we'll put a link to that. Now we have 1 minute left, Sue. What are we going to fill it with?
What are we going to fill it with?
Oh, I think. Oh, can I mention something before that? Sorry. What are we going to fill it with? We're going to fill it with the thing that I just thought of. Sorry, Sue. which was that the Wellington, the new Rainbow Youth Choir is having its first rehearsal in Te Matapiki Ki Te Ao Nui, 65 Victoria Street in Community Room 1. It's for high school age Rainbow Rangatahi and their allies from across the greater Wellington region. So it is something that's been born out of the Glamophones, which we are part of. Michael Stebbings is an amazing choir master, and he will be taking it. So so that is a Wednesday the 18th of March from 5 to 6 at the Matapihi Central Library. So
that'll be great.
It will be. Oh, my goodness, we have 7 seconds. I'm sorry,
seven
I filled it.
Seconds. Have a great Sunday, people.
Yes.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.